time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Look, it's not down on the corner, but it's close enough. Eric Meehan is here with us.
Here I am. Oh, gosh. I don't think I'm ever going to stop just starting off with Creedence. Because it starts my day off. Like, I see your Facebook post. That's right. I have to be on Rich today, and I got to remember to do that.
Have to.
It's immediately, like, I go to Spotify, and I look up Creedence, and I'm immediately like, I don't care what tune you hit. You're like, this is great.
Nothing wrong with
that. Because I used to start off with Weird Al, and that was always a, you know, never know. No, that had nothing to do with being on downtown.
No.
Just, you know.
Sure, I understand.
Now I start my days with a grumpy 11-year-old. That's how I start my days. Oh. That's my soundtrack.
Isn't that redundant? Grumpy 11-year-old?
There's a great line in Miller's Crossing from the Coen brothers. And he said, what side, wake up wrong side of the bed. He said, same side as always. Said, that's what I mean. And now my daughter and I are competing for it. You know, grumpiest me at 6:30 a.m.
Right.
I'm the biggest grumpy man, but I'm not, you know.
See, and I'm the opposite. I am annoyingly cheerful in the morning.
Oh.
And I'm the only one in the house, including the dog. Even she's like, stop.
Please, yeah.
Just let me go out and stop talking.
That's funny. Actually, yeah, Greta is annoyingly cheerful. Well, she just wants to play, like, at a certain, and you know, like, the squeaky toys start, and you're like, I'm not. I haven't had coffee. If I haven't had coffee, I can't have squeaky toys in my life.
No.
It's all right. I hope everybody's well out there. It's nice to be here in the studio. I had to call out last week because with due respect, Bangor Parks and Rec, please, we work for a living. We can't just be changing around the times that our children have to be on Union Street. Just please, from a friend and an assistant coach, right? Which is fun, by the way, because I get to yell.
Right.
I would be shushed if I were on the sideline, so it works out beautifully. They haven't asked me to leave yet. So we're continuing our tour around North America, and so last week I touched on Oregon, and we talked about what carved both the Oregon's Willamette Valley as well as the Columbia River Valley, which is shared by Washington State and Oregon. And so today we'll talk about Washington State, but I'll just remind everybody that what caused this massive erosion that caused these valleys, as well as this unbelievably strange, alien-looking area called the Scablands, was this breaking of a giant glacial dam, 2,000 feet high. Maybe once, maybe twice, maybe thrice, maybe 100 times, geologists are not sure, but they are quite sure that this happened. And it was gigantic ice shelf that kind of, you know, rolled down and then receded a little bit and rolled down and receded. So that's what led to the breaking of the dam. But it was a giant lake called Lake Missoula. Obviously, I'm sure a lot of you have heard of the town of Missoula, Montana. That's there you go. It covered more than that, by the way, more than that town. It covered several states, like everything you know as the big sky country, I guess, is basically that was all underwater. It was big water country. and so, yeah, just massive, massive. I mean, there's talk for anybody who's interested in ancient civilizations. There's talk of civilizations that maybe preceded some of the civilizations that we know of and study today that were around, 6,500 years ago or so, that were just... There's no evidence of these civilizations because there's thought that these massive floods. I mean, you have to understand when you watch the typhoons that hit Japan, right? And, these videos that people capture and they flatten like, one, two story buildings. These floods were, I mean, 100 times as large. Nothing under it would have survived. And what they were carrying, these gigantic, rocks and everything, would have just crushed everything. So, so it's interesting. There's just, it demolished everything in its path. Left a lot of really good soil for a lot of different agricultural purposes. Washington also, it's important, while we're talking about the geology of Washington, to remember that there are the Cascades, and then everything east of that is desert. that's also where all the wine is grown. So it's kind of a strange dichotomy, but if you, you know, sort of understand that, well, A, irrigation, but also B, you can do a lot of dry farming as well, given the right sort of, you know, conditions. And when you have conditions like that, you don't have to worry as much about things like the phylloxera louse, which doesn't like that kind of super dry soil. You don't have to worry about things like fungal infections or any, you know, moisture problems, because there ain't much. And the vines struggle, and they plunge the roots down way deep to find the water table, and they eventually do. And so you actually have really dramatically good conditions for grape growing where you don't have conditions for much else. So, super. What does that mean in terms of, you know, Washington State's production? Well, it actually is the second largest producer of wine for the continental U.S., actually, all the U.S., because I don't think Alaska is making a whole ton of wine. Ditto Hawaii. That said, second largest producer, but it's not even 10% of what California produces. So it's, you know, it's important to Washington, but it's, you know, overall, Cali is still sort of king, right? 17-hour summer days.
Oh,
brutal, man. Arctic winds in the winter can freeze vines, but also, as mentioned, bad for phylloxera. It's sort of this self-contained area. It was settled by Italian and German immigrants in the 1870s and 1880s, but of course our good friends in the government shut it down with prohibition along with the rest of all the wine trade, and they weren't as successful in this area nor as established or interested in trying to pretend that they were making godly sacramental wines. So it wasn't like you had the scene in California where you had a lot of famed wineries sort of switch. They just kind of shut down. So it now, again, is you know, sort of a newer wine region, as you were. And it really didn't come into play until, you know, 1970s. University of Washington actually had a home winemakers group, a lot of professors and things like that. And they created what was called the Associated Vintners, excuse me. Which eventually became Columbia, and for those of you who have bought, you know, wines from Columbia, Columbia Crest, etc., that's what that is. And then you had two other small wineries merge to become the now huge Chateau Saint-Michel. I'm going to have a sip of wine to wet my whistle.
As
pardon
well,
me.
You should, yes.
Mmm. We are drinking Washington State Cabernet Sauvignon, vinified by one Andre Mack. This is called In Sheep's Clothing. It is one of our most popular wines at the store.
Very good.
Absolutely delightful wine. Andre knows what he's doing. For those of you who don't know, Andre got his start as a sommelier for, amongst others, the famed Thomas Keller at his Per Se restaurant, and has now since gone into winemaking. So, legit stuff. So, yes, going back really, really fast, I'm running out of time, but I just want to mention to tie all this in, these guys hired... the guy who eventually Bruce and I will talk about, Andrei Chelichev, who was making his bones down in California at Beaulieu Vineyards. He came up, he consulted, he helped them, and all of a sudden you saw Merlot become this huge driver. Today you have Chateau Saint-Michel owning 2/3 of the vineyards available and or controlling them managerially. But there's a lot of really cool small independent vineyards that are making great, great stuff. So with the small remaining time I have, I just want to remind everybody who's coming into the store, please do mask up. We appreciate that very much. We're coming up on the holiday season, and I just want to kind of mention to everybody, there's a lot of talk about, you know, get in early to get what you want. I'm going to sort of reshape your mentality, I hope, to introduce to you that the supply chains are not so much that you're going to get what you want, it's that you're going to probably end up finding really, really interesting things that you didn't expect. Certainly that's the case in my industry. So while you may not find Veuve Clicquot, because you can't, which sounds absurd, you're going to be able to find some of the most unique, wonderful grower champagnes anywhere, and I'm much more excited to offer those anyway. So I would say for all of your favorite downtown retailers, as you're going about your holiday preparations and shopping, just keep in mind that you're probably going to end up with some really, really cool stuff. You know, it might not be what you want, but it'll be what you need. Someone said that much sexier than I did. Mm. But in the meantime, barely. Mr. Downtown. Cheers. I'll see y'all next week.
Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor.